show all about people's personal journeys to Bitcoin. In this episode, I speak with Abhilash Nayar, who works at HexaWallet and is building Bitcoin for India. We chat about his journey to startup life at HexaWallet, the importance of gold to Indian culture, and the role Bitcoin is playing in India. Listen on to learn what it feels like to experience a demonetization event, why the Indian digital payments revolution was so successful, and how the Bitcoin-focused community is growing. India is a country with an estimated 1.4 billion people, so Bitcoin adoption there is as important as anywhere else in the world. A very exciting prospect for those of us involved in the space. Abhi, once again, thank you so much for your time. Good luck with all your efforts growing the Bitcoin space in India. Now, I'd like to take a quick moment to mention my sponsor, fastbitcoins.com. They're a Bitcoin-only exchange based in the Isle of Man on a really exciting journey. If you'd like to learn more about them, I encourage you to search back through my episode library and listen to a couple of key conversations. Firstly, Danny Brewster, the founder CEO, and secondly, Nathan Smith, the chief compliance officer. Both stories give an excellent insight into the people building the business. In the coming weeks, you can expect a custom referral link, which you can also use on sign up to get the best possible rates. We haven't quite put the finishing touches on it, so please keep your eyes peeled. Now, on with the show. Hello and welcome to Bitcoin with Jake. Today I've got Abhi Nayar on the call. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Jake. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for joining. So there's tons of directions I'm hoping this conversation might go in, but it's a Bitcoin podcast. And so What I want to talk through is your personal journey specifically and what really brings you into Bitcoin. So do you have a genesis story? Like, you came across it once, ignored it, maybe looked at it a second time. Teach me a bit about what brought you to Bitcoin.
So in fact, my story happens to be slightly different from what we hear from most of the plebs, right? And it's the same for a lot of plebs over here in India as well. So for me, I luckily it's absolutely good fortune that I chanced upon an age old video. It's called Economic Armageddon and You. Okay. And this is in 2011. It was there on YouTube. So a friend showed it to me. I'll happily share the link with you with your listeners. And so that video was speaking. It is beautiful and it is very nicely animated and all those things keeps you engaged. And it spoke of inflation and it spoke of stagflation. It spoke of depressions. It spoke of money printing, etc. So and I was blown away. Because I was just about to get out of college when the whole world seemingly came crashing down in 2008, and so I was observant. I was following up in newspapers, reading magazines, keeping up with the latest of what was happening. So understanding that a bailout, it was $700 billion or something of that sort, of the American banks being bailed out and General Motors being bailed out, that was a big deal, right? So when I came across this video, I was able to appreciate it, and thankfully it stuck in my mind all these years later. So and then 2018, I read this book called Blockchain Revolution. And so that at that time, blockchain and crypto was still not as bad as it has become these days. So Blockchain Revolution by Don and Alex Tapscott. So that book, it spoke about very, very lucidly about how is it that there is no need of third parties anymore. What are the implications of that? Privacy, things like that. So basically, the book speaks of all of Bitcoin's ethos in one place, in one chapter, just that it uses the word blockchain instead of Bitcoin. So that set me off on the path that I have to get into this one way or the other. And fortunately, in 2020, I came across this company called HexaWallet, and I was off.
Okay. It's almost like a small children's drawing, when there's dots and you just draw the dots and then eventually you end up at this place. You're like, this is what I want to work on. And hence I've started a podcast. How interesting. And so what I'm going to do, I did say on Twitter a couple of days ago that I was speaking to you, Abhi, and anyone had any questions. And a friend of mine, the Wizard of Oz, And he's asked kind of two questions. He says, what made him curious about Bitcoin? And I guess you've kind of touched on that with that video in 2011. But how do you see it relative to gold? And then he also says, does his family see benefits of gold over Bitcoin? So shout out to the Wizard of Oz for the question. Thank you. But I'd like to tie in, like, why has he mentioned gold? Perhaps he knows you have a story along those lines specifically. I've done a bit of research, so I might know the answer, but answer as if I don't know, so the listeners out there get the story from the start. So
sure. So India,
why is
India
gold important in India, and why does Bitcoin play into that?
It's embedded in the culture, right? It's gold hodling is embedded in the culture. So we get to have the benefits of, you know, having had such an old civilization that our forefathers made sure that when families were getting created, there was an influx of gold into the family so that the family had a base. If everything went to shit, still there's something for them to fall back on.
And now, so that would happen at, like, sorry to jump in, Abby, but what at, so for example, talk me through it, like a traditional wedding, a piece of gold would be a gift perhaps, or like just as simple as that, like how would it work?
It's definitely not a piece of gold. It's a lot of gold.
Okay.
It's a lot of gold. And unfortunately, and I use the word unfortunately based on my current level of understanding of things, and I may be wrong. I'm always open to that. It generally comes in from the girl's side of the family. So so that is contested, and definitely it tends to be a burden on the girl's family that they have to spend so much of time as the girl grows up. This is very real stuff, and we are far away from Bitcoin right now. I hadn't realized we'll go this deep.
But this is what I find so interesting because it's contextual. I actually haven't yet spoken to anyone on this podcast journey based in India. So these will be very simple, high level questions about culture there that I haven't discussed with anyone else before. So forgive me if they're a little basic, but I think it's so interesting because it brings such good context to why Bitcoin's important in India, which we'll get to eventually, I'm sure. And so, I mean, it's not uncommon. What you're describing is what I would see as something called a dowry. So if you have a daughter, your daughter has to be given, in where I grew up in England, people would give away farmland with their daughters or whatever the case might be. And this is a long time ago, admittedly, but traditionally I can see that. Okay. And so gold would be the preferential value transfer, so to speak. Okay. Yeah. So it's very deep in the culture. Okay. Yeah. And is that what the Wizard of Oz is talking about when he says, why does your family see the benefits of gold?
Yeah. So gold continues to be one of the best store of value, right? Along with real estate, whatever is case, right? But to answer his question, unfortunately, yet my family or the rest of the country is yet to make that very apparent connection between the qualities of gold and how Bitcoin offers to be better than gold in terms of transferability, etc. Right. So people in the bull run during the crypto bull run of 2020-21, everyone got into crypto. And people made money. People made money for sure. And then it all went to shit. And people did lose money as well, for sure.
Yeah.
But one insight that I can bring from here, from India, is that nobody has any doubt that Bitcoin is going to the moon. When would that happen? That is a question. And why people are slightly worried of putting money into Bitcoin and just hodling rather than day trading, those quick conversions of a little fiat in, a little more fiat out, putting it into traditional instruments like stock, gold, obviously, land, obviously, right? So without thinking about the yield curve of stocks and combining it with inflation, that is still the work
haven't
that
quite got there.
Done.
And I don't think that's unreasonable. I mean, a wedding is a very, shall we say, traditional process wherever you are in the world, generally speaking. And to replace a, you know, precious metal that's been part of that ceremony process for thousands of years with a cryptocurrency, like that's really kind of new end. Like persuading people to make a 1 or 2% allocation in their, you know, wealth portfolio is difficult enough, let alone, you know, changing how weddings work. Okay. And so, yeah, look, I'd love to focus on yourself, Abby. So what was life like growing up in India? And, you know, you joined Hexa Wallet. So talk me through a bit about your professional background and how you got into that and how it all started.
So growing up, the gods were kind. I had a fantastic upbringing, typical middle class upbringing, typical middle class values, right? Go to school, study well, get a job. Don't travel the world before, you know, transitioning into a job. Things like that. Get an IT job. things like that. So, I mean, blessed with fantastic parents, very, very loving, very respectful parents. Extremely fortunate that, you know, they allowed me to pursue my fancies of entrepreneurship and startups and pursuing whatever caught my fancy at different points, be it digital marketing or be it startups or now Bitcoin. So, God has been kind of a very good childhood for sure.
Wonderful. And I have to have a moment of reflection. I love startups too. Like this idea of entrepreneurship, like working with people that think they see the future and they take risk and they throw everything into it and it then doesn't work. And then they go, fuck, and they go back and they get a job for a bit and then they start something else. It's this really exciting type of character that gets involved in these type of things. So talk to me a bit about that. So which were, you know, some of your favorite startup projects that you went through and what do you learn from those?
So let me take you to 2013, 2014. And I was always into reading books. And so reading books got me into reading nonfiction. Nonfiction got me into reading biographies and autobiographies. And that led to, you know, reading about all these startup CEOs, etc. So I absolutely enjoyed reading Richard Branson's autobiography, Losing My Virginity. So I know the jury is out on Sir Richard Branson today, and people, the general sentiment that I at least I'm hearing in my circles is he's, you know, there's a bit of a anger against him. I haven't researched that why so, but the book is fantastic, and the book is very highly recommended from me. And the concept of him saying have fun, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, aim big, have fun, stuck around. Google and Facebook as well. So there is a fantastic book called In the Plex by Stephen Levy, which talks of about the first 10 years of the foundation of Google. So Sundar Pichai, the current CEO, comes in much later in the book. He's an Android dev, and then he starts leading Android. He hasn't become the CEO back then. So there's a fantastic book called Business Model Canvas as well. So I'm sure you must have heard of the canvas itself.
Yeah,
but there's a book.
I've done that, the lean canvas.
Yeah. So Business Model Canvas again was a fantastic book. I have been observant of startups because I've had the good fortune of having fantastic mentors in my life at various points of time, and they pointed me towards entrepreneurship and the startup ecosystem. So both locally and globally, I've been observant. There is a fantastic success story born, and it has grown in India, called Redbus. It's a bus ticketing platform. As simple as that. And the founder of the company, Fanindra Sama, was working with an IT company. He wanted to go home for a big festival called Diwali and couldn't get tickets for it. The dude decided to make a company out of it.
Wow. And so extraordinary when you think about A, the power of software, but B, India's 1.1 billion people. And how many people in India have smartphones today?
The smartphone penetration over here is insane. That is something I can definitely assure. Like,
I mean, what, like 50%? I mean,
I'm sure more than 50%.
Wow.
For sure.
Wow.
Yeah. But you go to villages, people have smartphones. Yes. You go to villages, you go to rural areas, the reception, the network is fantastic.
Yeah.
You get three. Yeah. You get 3G, if not 4G, and beyond. And everyone has got smartphones. Smartphones over here in India are relatively cheap. So everyone is plugged in. Everyone is on TikTok. Now, India banned TikTok because of the relations with China. but everyone and their mother and their in-laws are doing, you know, Instagram reels and YouTube shorts. And yeah.
And happening. Sorry, and so Abby, did you start a company yourself, or you've always worked within startups?
So I worked with startups, and then I started freelancing, and I came across ExaWallet as a freelancer. So I started freelancing with ExaWallet. ExA used to be one of my companies, and then I jumped in headlong.
Perfect.
So that's what happened.
And you're a developer, I guess, or
no? I'm not. I'm a mechanical engineer.
Okay. Well, look, you brought us nicely to Hexa. Let's talk about that for a moment. Teach me about Hexa and what you guys are doing there.
So Hexa, it is a wallet that has been, you know, built with proper Bitcoiner principles. It is Bitcoin only. It will always be Bitcoin only, and self-custodial. So Bitcoin that people keep in their wallet doesn't come to any central servers of ours. It's with them. It's their own. They back up using seed phrases. The very basics. It you know, checks off the very basics of being a Bitcoin only wallet. And lots of learnings in the past 3 years, more than 3 years of the company's existence itself, and 2.5 years of me being at the company. So initially it was packed in with a lot of features. People could donate, people could create campaigns and donate two campaigns using the wallet. And we have, and it used to have a multi-sig account as well. We realized that it was becoming an everything product for every Bitcoiner, and that is, and everything for everyone generally isn't a good idea, right?
Yeah, it's hard. So, yeah.
So now we split it open.
As people would say that kind of thing, right? What do you guys do better than anyone else?
So the first thing is UX. We get phenomenal feedback on UX. The feedback has been consistently positive. So that is something that we are very proud of, amongst other things.
And talk to me about the wallet market. Like, what does it mean to be Bitcoin only? How many Bitcoin only wallets are out there? What's the difference between custodial and non-custodial, and how are you seeing, you know, adoption rates across the world, and what's the total size of the market you're going after, and just some of the mechanics of the business opportunity you're looking at?
It will take time. That is our realization, for sure. Having looked at the 2021 bull run and the kind of noise that was out there at the same time, the crypto noise, right? At the same time, so many people started getting into Bitcoin, started becoming Bitcoin only, and the kind of signal that started coming out, it was very, very heartening to see. 2022 has been unfortunately a rude awakening, right? And doesn't seem that there is still a lot of work to be done, for sure, for people to start even getting what crypto is. And then, you know, trying to be able to make a difference between why shitcoins are called so, why Bitcoiners are always passionate, always, you know, the harbingers of doom. Mm. So it is still a little in the future that people start understanding why Bitcoin only, why self-custody, why not your keys, not your coins. So that is what we are observing at the company.
And I mean, I for one had some money in Celsius, for example. Luckily, it was a very small percentage of my portfolio, so it was there as an experiment. But learning the hard way, right? You know, it's a custodial service offering yield, and it blew up. Now, some of the funds might make their way back to depositors, but who knows? It's going to take a long time, at the very least, to find out. And so, yeah, a non-custodial service like Hexa is so important. Just to reel back a second. So, you know, do you envisage, and let's look at the mechanics of India, for example, over 500 million people with a smartphone, they like gold, they're kind of working out that Bitcoin's a good bet long-term, they're going to download a wallet. So that's 500 million people potentially as the market size to go after. Is that what you guys are looking to do, or like, just what intrigues me basically is, what's the use case for people in India with Bitcoin? And then how does Hexa potentially play into that? Or is it a completely global product? Which I guess it can be from day one. So do you go after geography? Do you go after an age? Do you go after a specific characteristic? Yeah, sorry, there's quite a bit packed in there, but
Sure. No. So I'll break open the thread, or rather I'll unwind the threads of it. So first of all, we are a global company. Hexa Wallet is available in like north of 170 countries.
Okay.
So that is one thing. We aren't specifically looking at the Indian market per se, or not looking at the Indian market per se, right? It's definitely not just a geographic pursuit for us. It is more of, we understand that we are Bitcoin only, and people would not discover us right away. People would go looking for crypto companies. People would go looking for companies that give them higher percentage yields, for example, right?
Yep.
So for us, it is about doing a very good job of being a Bitcoin-only wallet, speaking with Bitcoiners, introducing Bitcoiners to the wallet, gathering their feedback, and then, taking it from there, taking in their buy-in, right? And that, yeah, okay, this makes sense. It checks off all the boxes that, yeah, privacy is taken care of. Yes, it is Bitcoin-only. Yes, I enjoy using it. Yes, it has some features that I want to use as a Bitcoiner. And then hopefully it starts cascading into Bitcoiners recommending the wallet to their new coiner friends.
Correct.
And crypto curious friends, etc., etc. So that is it.
Okay. And what I love about that, just to reel back to, your interest in startups and entrepreneurship, is Bitcoin is global. Bitcoin doesn't care where you're from. Doesn't care how old you are, doesn't care what sex you are. And therefore, the market size for software products is absolutely massive and a huge opportunity to go after. Final question on Hexa, and we'll get into some other bits. But as a wallet, how do you guys make money? So as a company, where do you make your revenue from?
Sure. So one thing is, I mentioned that we had a multi-sig account, right? And we are in the process of breaking open Hexa Wallet into three products. Hexa continues to be a product with a single sig account, and it would be a very, very basic wallet for Bitcoiners to on ramp their no coiner friends or crypto curious friends. So we are tied up with a few exchanges. And when people purchase through the wallet, there's a bit of a cut that comes in for us.
Okay.
So that is one thing with Hexa. But apart from that, we are launching something which we are calling Keeper, and Keeper is going to be a vault for Bitcoiners to hodl Bitcoin long term. So it seamlessly speaks with hardware wallets. It has multi-sig accounts, etc. So that would be a subscription based model. That is the revenue model for our company.
Yeah. It's worth obviously bearing in mind, solving problems for people is the first step, right? What problem are you solving? Okay, here's the solution, here's a product. Okay, love it. Once you've got to that stage, there's always other problems you can solve for people. And that's potentially where you can actually make your money. Especially with a software product, if it's free to use, then you've got to make money some other way. Very cool. Okay, well, I look forward to watching the progress of Hexa over the years to come. What I'd like to get into now, Abby, is more about the use case of Bitcoin in India. And you're part of a group called Bitcoin for India.
Yep.
And so teach me about Bitcoin for India, and then we'll talk a bit more about why it's so important there.
So Bitcoin for India basically started off of a frustration, generally of Indian Bitcoiners is frustration. So when I started working with Hexa Wallet, I slowly started getting exposed to individual Bitcoiners over here in India, doing their own thing in their own dens, and wondering to themselves the same existential questions, right, that every Bitcoiner has. That I'm so passionate about this, my friends don't get it, am I the crazy one? I generally get called the crazy one, but am I,
yeah,
and not having anyone to as a sounding board, and not having anyone who gets it, you know.
Yep.
So slowly I came in touch with a couple of people who are doing their own thing, contributing to the Bitcoin core, reaching out to people overseas, you know, in Europe, US, etc., being part of Discord groups, but not really knowing Indian Bitcoiners per se, right? Mm-hmm. And when I showed up in their lives, it was as if floodgates were opened and people were like, oh my God, finally someone with whom we could speak. And we did not know that there are other Bitcoiners over here. This is 2020, by the way. This is not 22. So then we were like, okay, let's have a Bitcoin only meetup. Let's see the response. And the response was tremendous.
Wow.
So this was in February this year, 2022. And people came from all the parts of the country. One look at the map and you know that we are a ginormous country, right?
Wow.
People came from all parts, all modes of transport, from flight to boats, you know?
Wow. And so Abhi, where did you host the Bitcoin meetup in India?
Mumbai.
And is that where you're based?
I am based about 300 kilometers away, inland from Mumbai, a beautiful city called Pune.
Okay. Yeah, it's such a huge place, India, isn't it? I've been lucky to go twice before, actually. I did motorbike trips in Kerala and also up in Kashmir. But yeah, I'd love to go back more in a kind of business perspective. I was only kind of 20 at the time when I did that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I speak the language, by the way. So my surname, Nair, we are Malayalis. My roots are in Kerala.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we had an amazing trip. We drove right up through the Western Ghats for about 8 days, about 1,500 kilometers on Royal Enfields, driving through all the tea plantations and camping and stuff. It was amazing. I loved it. But this isn't about me. This is about yourself. So, so teach me, how many people came to your Bitcoin meetup in Mumbai? And of those people that came, why are they so passionate about Bitcoin? Like, what is it that was remiss in their day lives that they need it for? And what makes you so excited about Bitcoin for India?
So what made people come is probably, you know, something in my opinion is very common amongst Bitcoiners. Bitcoiners, by the very nature of what Bitcoin asks of you, which is hundreds of hours of research and study, etc. You have to put in the work, right? So you can only do that when you yourself have certain North Stars, certain policies that you live life by, and you have seen things and you have questioned things and you're curious by the very nature, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I think curiosity is the first thing. It definitely was for me, for mm-hmm. sure. And this is a hypothesis. So Bitcoiners tend to be an emotional bunch, right? All of us, we tend to be passionate. So Bitcoin is a fantastic outlet for passion to be indulged. So that is another thing that I think gets people into Bitcoin. But especially in India, I wouldn't say it is the this phenomenal need of, you know, overcoming inflation and getting away from inflation that brings people to Bitcoin in the first place. I don't think that's the case, in my opinion.
It's not. Okay. So what brings people to Bitcoin? I mean,
your video seems to be stuck, Jake.
Yeah, it's slowed down a touch, hasn't it? Can you hear me now? It's sped back up for me. Hopefully you can hear me.
I can hear you clearly, but I can't see the video.
Don't worry. I only release this on audio anyway, Abhi. So the picture doesn't matter. Okay, because I was assuming that in India, maybe it's difficult to get a bank account, or the credit card market doesn't work well, or there's some other issue with the existing financial system that means that Bitcoin is actually very useful.
No, on the contrary, it all works smoothly. It is we are right up there with digital payments and things like that. Everywhere you go to the smallest of shops, kiosks, etc., people have QR codes. You scan the merchants are having QR codes across the country, because we had a demonetization event. I think this was 2016 or 17, mm-hmm. where overnight the currency was demonetized, right? So people had to scamper a little, and it was very heartening to see. At the same time, scary for obvious reasons, that people were nimble and people immediately transitioned into paying digitally, rather than standing in front of ATMs for hours on end to get their cash out. So
can you give me some more details on this demonetization event? Because I do remember it. There was a certain rupee note that was taken out of circulation or something, wasn't there? I can't remember the value.
Most of them were replaced.
Just hundreds,
hundreds, 500s, thousands.
Wow.
Those were the denominations.
And it's moments overnight like that, isn't it, where when governments behave in such a aggressive way, people slowly but surely do get pointed towards Bitcoin, don't they? Because, well, hang on, I was using this type of money for my lifetime, but now it doesn't work. I need something else. What do you think was the main impact? So, obviously people don't want to get stuck at an ATM trying to get money out that they can't use. So they were driven online, were they? And was Bitcoin a benefactor of that, or other services at that stage?
No, unfortunately not. Bitcoin wasn't a benefactor of that, at least in India. People went online. Everyone became digital. Everyone started having fiat wallets in their phones. Everyone started using QR codes. So it was scarily seamless. The transition happened within weeks, because digital payments and digital wallets were just upcoming at that time. Mm-hmm. Overnight, they were everywhere. But people did not make the connection between what was actually happening.
And do you think that the government was working in connection with digital payments providers to push that process? Like, what was the reason for the demonetization event?
That's the floor. That question is the floor is lava question, right? So I wouldn't want to venture that deep into answering that question, based on my limited understanding.
Sure.
For sure, right? But at an individual level, I don't think that governments were working hand in glove with digital payment companies to push this process over here, because the landscape of digital payment companies over here in India is wide, and I am so far to see the government specifically pushing for a particular product or two particular products that hasn't happened yet.
I must kind of go along with you there. Sorry, I wasn't pushing you to be judgmental or conspiratorial versus the government per se. It's often a human error that leads to a scenario rather than a predetermined kind of nefarious deed that like, to me, that immediately is like, hang on, so would the government not push people into digital payments on purpose because of that? But obviously that wasn't even a discussion at the time. It just looks like it might have been in my understanding of this conversation we've just had. Wow. Okay. So let's continue a little bit along the lines of what it's like in India. So, why do you think people are excited about Bitcoin? You mentioned that people know it's going to go to the moon. They're just not sure when. So what is it that really gets people excited?
The fact, so this is a conjecture, based on my firsthand experience of having observed people interact with cryptocurrencies and talk about cryptocurrencies, right? There is a lot of momentum around crypto, and people in all their KYC'd platforms, they can see that Bitcoin is right at the top, and it doesn't budge. Everything else below Bitcoin, apart from Ether, everything else is you know, in churning away. Sometimes you see some shitcoin with 450%, you know, markup. The other day it's down. The second day it's something else, right? But they've seen that Bitcoin is the most stable, you know, cryptocurrency out there. The world call it's volatile. it happens to be the most stable. So people know, and it's not that people don't understand it. It's just that they are not in it for the long haul, because they have to take care of their retirements. They have to take care of purchasing the next shiny new object. Like all you know, typical human traits that have formed over the years due to insane marketing and yeah. You know, culture specific nudges. So.
Well, and this is one of the cool things about being a Bitcoin only business such as Hexa, and why I would, you know, as I build my podcast, ideally work only with potential sponsors that are Bitcoin only, is that, you know, let's say you have a contract with Coinbase. Well, you're basically sending anyone that you know, persuade that Bitcoin's a good idea onto a really fun, you know, online casino, essentially, with all these other things that might go up faster than Bitcoin, that are really easy to buy, really easy to sell. And it's just human nature, isn't it? We like gambling, and yep. You know, that's basically what this is. It's
we like money.
we like money. Yeah. and I mean, how I look at, you know, in a sense, basically every other crypto project except for Bitcoin is they're startups. They are a software business that was able to print their own money, which is a digital coin, and they can control the amount of these digital coins, and they can send them to themselves before they send them to anyone else first. And then they can pay whoever gives them some money to create the business in the first place, a marketing budget to get Cointelegraph to talk about how amazing they are at building a slightly more environmentally friendly Bitcoin or whatever. And suddenly, you know, a guy on his smartphone in Melbourne is buying it at the same time as a guy on his smartphone in Mumbai. And you've got this global marketplace of people all chasing this same kind of greed, basically. It's quite incredible to watch. And I guess that's where, you know, something like Bitcoin for India comes in. So you've had your initial meetup in February of this year. Are you guys going to look to develop this into like a proper conference? And what's the future like for this event?
So we had a proper meetup in February, and that was amazing. And slowly but suddenly, in fact, people started you know, popping up in all different cities across the country saying that, hey, I'm a Bitcoiner, I would like to, you know, facilitate a meetup. How do I do it? Wow. And we were like, go ahead and do it. We are happy to announce it, right? Yeah. We are happy to support you digitally. Take it and do it the way you want. So we've had meetups in 12 cities now. In fact, it has been continuously happening. It hasn't stopped in February. It was not a once and done thing. Okay. And we are actually having a conference in the month of November, 5th and 6th of November. It's in Goa. Yeah. You may have visited the state.
Yeah, I visited Goa. Yeah. My first trip. Okay, cool. And so it's a few days, and you'll have different speakers, and you have to pay to attend, I guess.
Yes, but we've kept the ticks at very, very nominal rates. We want people to come in and explore and understand.
Yeah. And so when you start an event like this, what do you hope to come out of it? And I would imagine, you know, high level is you're looking to educate people, but as entrepreneurs, there are obviously opportunities to put together a business-minded person with a tech-minded person, and, you know, suddenly a company comes out of it. What are some of the output that has been created as a result of the kind of network you've started building?
So is this a Bitcoin for India specific question, or is it a conference?
Whatever you make of it question. But for example, here in Australia, there was the Wizard of Oz actually is the founder of the Bitcoin Bush Bash, and him and three mates were stuck in different parts of Australia during the lockdowns, and they decided to have a meetup and talk about Bitcoin in a town in the middle of nowhere that was equidistant between them. They put it up online saying, we're going to meet at this place, and they had 40 people turn up. And I mean, for Australia of 20 million people, that's quite a lot, and all the distances are very big. So yeah, they now do three per year in three different states. And I went to one, there's about 80 people rocked up. And it's a community that's growing. And I can see how from that community, the cool part being, as you mentioned before, there was a sense of proof of work involved in even being there. So you had to drive 4 hours out of Melbourne to go to the one I went to. Some people had come from all across the country. And I can see an opportunity where, you know, when talent comes together and meets and makes friends, ideas get exchanged and basically companies get built. So it's something I'm personally very, very keen to help develop here in Australia whilst I'm living here, is communities. And out of those communities will come interesting opportunities to A, invest, and to B, build businesses. So are you seeing that as a result of, you know, what organically has grown into Bitcoin for India? I mean, you mentioned already 12 meetups. That's God knows how many people in India you've actually had, you know, physically meet up now. But do you see what I mean?
So yes, now I do. So let me answer it apart from the conference things that have been happening, and then let's move to the conference. So yes, for sure, right? In 2020, the kind of question that an Indian Bitcoiner used to have, that am I the only one, or you know, are these five other people that I know in four different states are the only people out there, that isn't a question anymore, right? Because people know that there is a very, very vibrant community, Bitcoin community over here in India. Wow. There are Telegram groups, there are dedicated Telegram groups, and this is not just B4I. There are many other dedicated Bitcoin groups out there. So shout out to a very dear friend of ours, Raj Maitra, and he has got a Telegram channel called Bitcoin Only India. I'll be very happy to share it with you.
Sure.
You can take a call to whether to put it on the show notes or not. But yeah, love the guy, love the community. So they have been putting in a lot of efforts connecting people. B4I only contributes. So now people know that yes, not only am I not alone, not only am I not crazy, but on the contrary, there are a lot like me, and there are a lot many people who are working on a lot many products. There are lawyers in the ecosystem, there are journalists in the ecosystem, there are obviously developers in the ecosystem. I myself have a marketing background, so I come from a marketing bent of mind that yep, hey, Bitcoin needs to, people need to know Bitcoin. So
they do absolutely. And that's the funny thing about it is you become, and here I am with a Bitcoin podcast talking to people all over the world about Bitcoin. I'm so fascinated that there are these different groups in different countries that have previously had nothing connecting them at all.
Yeah.
Suddenly they do. Why? Yep. Like, why is everyone converging on this new thing? And that to me is fascinating, and why I started it. Okay, so there's been it's interesting because what you're telling me is that the Bitcoin only scene in India it's much earlier than I thought. I thought it would be much bigger in terms of how you're describing. So in many ways, it's the same with here in Australia, I guess. Okay. And so from the conference, then let's go through to that. And then, you know, opportunities that are coming out of that. Are you seeing businesses that, you know, might get built as a result of putting these people together?
That's the hope, right? That is always the hope. But that is still a little out there. If we are able to, physically show Indian Bitcoiners that, hey, here's your community. There are a lot of us out here who think exactly the way you do, who believe, who have the same value systems the way that you do. And we are all, just a phone call away, just a telegram away, just a Twitter DM away. That itself would be something phenomenal to have achieved from the first conference. Is my opinion as an individual contributor to the B4I conference that we are conducting.
Okay, yeah. So it's that's the hope, isn't it? Is that when you are able to pull these people together, then who knows what might come out of it.
And we have a tech track. We have parallel tracks. So one is that there's a main stage where there are a different set of people, and there's a tech track is also happening.
Okay.
So it goes into the deep technical aspects of Bitcoin. So, yeah.
And so, Yeah, in my experience of India was a funny one in a sense, in that it was incredibly developed, more so than I expected, and especially how you describe smartphone adoption. It's crazy, right? But then at the same time, there was these really rather amazing old school bureaucracies that just kind of seemingly slowed things down. So talk to me a little bit about the environment as an entrepreneur in India. And is it easy to set up companies? And is the government very on board with entrepreneurship and helps you to do it and facilitates things as much as possible? And then more specifically, Bitcoin, like, how does the Indian government look at Bitcoin companies? And are they making life easy to set up companies with Bitcoin, you know, as the major product within it? You know, I know here, for example, in Australia, one thing that would, you know, worry me setting a business up here is, are the government actually going to let you flourish as a company? And, you know, will they even really let you get going? I'm not sure. Now, obviously, you're just a software business, so you could move to Malta tomorrow and they'd lose everything. So I think there's an interesting game theory playing out in general.
We are registered in the UK, by the way. So our team is Indian. But
is that right? So HexaWallet's registered in the UK. Okay.
Yeah.
And there you have it, right? A software company that's got manpower in a country that might not be very open to having you there. And you, it's a workaround.
It's not that adversarial. It's not that adversarial for sure. It isn't, because see, crypto exchanges are here in India for sure, and people are hodling and people are trading, and the government is taxing, right? The government is taxing like 30% of the gains.
Wow. Yeah,
so yeah. So it isn't all you know, adversarial. It is not the governments versus the crypto bros or the Bitcoin bros. It is not there yet. Hopefully it won't get there. Hopefully we'll be able to, you know, a better sense would prevail, and you know, we start seeing Bitcoin adoption for all the right reasons, rather than, you know, people's store of value and people's savings getting eroded away, and civil war breaking out. Like if you look at the condition in Sri Lanka, our neighbors, right?
Wow.
It is so sad, right? It is so sad. A country defaulting on its payments, on its debts is insane. Who would have thought, right? Who would have thought that, you know, they say millennials have it easy. Apparently, millennials are having the hardest generation from quite some time, right? We've seen a pandemic. We've seen countries defaulting on their debts.
Well, and more will default too. I mean, just last week, my home country of England, Bank of England stepping in and buying whatever they're having to buy to shore up a pension market that's, you know, it's fucked. The whole thing's so crazy. It was the gilt market and some swaps that these traders were playing around with. And, you know, it was just awful. And the British pound's obviously fallen against the dollar. And suddenly that's like, okay, even with the inflation rates in England are like 10%. And that's the official CPI.
Your voice broke very badly, Jake. So I lost about 15 seconds.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now, Abby?
Yes, it's better.
Yeah. I was just saying the situation in England and how, you know, the Bank of England's just turned on the money printer, essentially. Even with inflation rates at 10%, they're doing it already, which is just extraordinary. You would have expected them to try and get CPI back to under 5%, but they haven't waited around. So what we're going to see going forwards, I mean, these countries are bankrupt. So lots of
your
countries
voice is
are
breaking,
going to...
Jake, you will have to take care of the internet. This part will have to be edited out.
Oh, no, that's a shame. Can you hear me now? Hello.
Yes,
I'm back.
Your video's frozen for sure.
I'm going to turn my video off. Hang on.
Yes,
that might be helpful. Let me just start again. Abby, can you hear me? You've turned your voice off as well.
No. I got a call and I cut it. I can hear you clearly.
Great. Sorry. We were just talking about countries defaulting on their debts. And, you know, I think the chances are that there'll be lots of other countries that default in the very near term. It's crazy. I mean, who's next? I'm not sure. But to see the Bank of England turn on the money printer last week when inflation's still running at around 10% was crazy. Teach me a bit about the economic situation in India at the moment. What kind of inflation rates do you guys have there?
So the official numbers keep flitting between 7 to 10, but it's definitely way beyond that. So me being a Bitcoiner, me being a marketer, you know, having observed rates and how people sell things, etc. This has been a personal exercise for me that I've been going to stores and I've been very observant of prices in these past two and a half years. Yeah. And I also speak with merchants. I ask them, okay, so what has happened to your margins? What do you think? By what percentage have the prices gone up? People generally answer anywhere between 15 to 25%. All commodities have gone up.
Yeah,
it's still not as bad as some of South American countries like maybe Venezuela or Argentina. Yes. With at least based on the news that we are hearing, Turkey for example or Lebanon for example, it's not that bad. But yes, people are feeling the squeeze for sure. But it's still at the level of a squeeze. Rather than something that would make them squeal and starting to revolt, we are far from revolting. We are seeing these videos coming out of people going to banks with guns, wanting their own money, right?
Yeah.
Thankfully for us here in India, the situation is not that bad yet, and hopefully it doesn't get that way.
No, and I hope so too. It's horrible when you see those stories. I would agree with you in terms of like a 15 to 25% inflation rate. I think you can almost double the government CPI rates, and that's kind of roughly where it is for the UK, the US, Australia as well. And you're right, it's not the kind of 2 to 5% that you don't really notice. It's like, it's clearly the prices are changing. But then it's not enough to, sit on the street and stop going to work and all the rest of it. But, we're also fortunate to have done our research when it comes to what inflation actually is, what drives it, how do you protect yourself against it? But the average person, has no idea, basically. And that's what's so nefarious about it. It's a very insidious government policy that it taxes you via stealth. You don't know that it's doing what it's doing, and it allows governments to continue to pay for things that they don't have the money for. And it's an interesting one. I mean, that's really what Bitcoin's doing. It's disrupting central banking as a business model, and it's going to completely change how governments are funded in the future. This is still a long way out, obviously, but it's amazing to consider what might happen. So, and on that, then let's just go down that vibe for the last 5 minutes, Abby. So how do you see Bitcoin and its impact on India in the future?
I see what I feel is that people here people know cryptocurrency for sure. And they need to start seeing Bitcoin as a store of value, and that hasn't happened yet. Okay. They understand that it is like I mentioned, right? That it is stable compared to other cryptocurrencies. Everyone knows that it will go places for sure. Whether other shitcoins survive or not, that is also something, an awareness that people have. Having said, we are still some time away where people understand that they should be shifting their Bitcoin out of exchanges, taking self custody, things like that. So the future is good for sure, and when it comes, it will come suddenly and seamlessly. Of that, I do not have a doubt. So those would be my comments for the near future, like maybe the next 3 years or so.
And I'd like to just chime on something there. So why do you believe that it will come suddenly and seamlessly?
Based on the demonetization phenomena, right? The way people went to digital payments was insane. And it was beautiful to see that people didn't really struggle that much. Obviously, people who had cash stashed away, they had a hard time. Goes without saying. But generally, the masses, the merchants, people who had to take payments and people who had to give payments, they neither of the party had to line up in front of ATMs, you know, for hours on end. So people from, you know, dealing in cash immediately, like in a matter of weeks, I'm not even saying months, in a matter of weeks, had apps installed in their phone, had QRs printed out, you know, displayed on the walls of their stores, etc., etc. So that gives me hope that once you know once the bear market is done and the, you know, the sun starts shining again, people would be able to make a seamless transition. Unfortunately, into crypto, then into Bitcoin, and that's our job, right? That's our job as Bitcoiners, that we continue educating people about why to be Bitcoin only, the values of Bitcoin, and things like that.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's one of the most exciting things we can spend, you know, the next 10 years of our lives doing, is teaching people about the difference, and we can more than likely build businesses around that project, basically. Which is really, I mean, it's so exciting to me. It's what gets me up every day. And there'll be so many cool opportunities that come from that as well. Yeah, okay. So I see what you mean. So the digital payment adoption was so fast. You think the same thing will happen when Bitcoin really kicks off. And of course, with that, one would expect a huge spike in demand for coins and therefore a price rise, which in itself is that kind of self-fulfilling number go up type technology philosophy that I like so much about it as an investment opportunity. You know, the more people get interested, the more the price goes up because of the fixed supply. Yeah, very cool. Well, Abby, listen, a whole hour's flown by. Thank you so much for your time. I've really loved getting to know you a little bit and hearing about your story. My last question is pretty simple. Where can people get in touch with you?
The best place is Twitter. My handle is Abhilash Nair 11, 11 because that's the year I made the handle in. And the DMs are open. Shitcoiners won't be entertained. Bitcoiners would have a red carpet, red carpet welcome. So that's how it is.
Brilliant. Well, Abby, thank you so much for joining Bitcoin with Jake. Really appreciate it. Give us a shout if I can ever help with anything. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Jake. This has been fun.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you. Well done, friends. You made it to the end of the episode. I couldn't be more grateful for you sharing this time with me and putting your energy into this project. If you like what you hear, please, first and foremost, share it with your friends and family. Getting the message out to those around us nearest and dearest, I think, is one of the most important things we can possibly do. On top of that, wherever you listen to this, please rate, subscribe, share, etc. I'd really appreciate the support there as I try and build out this podcast. And lastly, I'm looking to build a network of startups and founders in this space. So if you know anyone that's interested in building a business and is looking for investment, please send them in my direction. Thank you so much, guys. You've been listening to Bitcoin with Jake.